subject area that we're working on today in this service is the area of faith. It seems that in the last 4 or 5 months, if I had any one topic to choose that my Father's been dealing with me about in my own life is the area of faith and the trust. It's interesting. One pastor was telling a children's sermon, and he asked the children, "What is faith?" And one of the little children said, "I know what faith is." And he said, "What is it?" He says, "Well, faith is something you hope it'll happen, but you know it won't." Well, that isn't what it talks about in the Bible. In fact, Hebrews 1 gives the best definition of faith. It's that which we know for certain, which we hope in. Well, what do we know for certain? I hope you know for certain this morning that God loves you. And so you hope your life into that kind of love. You plan 82 with the kind of certainty that God loves you. And if He loves you, He has plans for you. If He loves you, He'll not forsake you in this year, no matter what happens. So you see, faith is very important. We're called to be individuals and then a church on the pilgrimage of faith. 2 weeks ago in the mail, I received this periodical from one of our former church members and staff members. Cliff Mauser was here on an internship, worked with us for 1 year. He's now at Golden Gate Seminary. And he sent me several things to read, but this is one of the things. And he said, "This book disturbs me and bothers me." I've read it, and it bothers me also. I hope it's not accurate. You see, it's titled "The Matter of Faith: A Study Guide for Churches on the Nuclear Arms Race." Another thing happened just about the time I received this book. There's a church in Washington, D.C. that it's not a Baptist church, but it's a church I deeply admire. It's a church that has that strange balance of evangelism and discipleship and social action. It's very healthy. In my terms, it's one that I've never visited the church, but I've read all about it. I know some of the lay people in the church, and I've always thought, you know, now that's what a church is really about. It's a church a little larger than this one, not a lot larger, and it has a lot of churches inside the church. And I mean, there's not an issue in life that they're not willing to tackle because they believe God is somewhere in all issues of life. So anyway, somebody had mentioned, because they knew that I admired that church, they said, "I understand that church is in trouble." I said, "How's that?" And they said, "Well, it stopped growing. And in fact, it's declining in membership and financially." Well, I read an article written in this periodical by the pastor of that church. I can understand why it's declining. Very prophetic role. It's so easy as a pastor and so tempting to only feed people what you'd like to hear and make you feel very comfortable when the truth of the matter is I'm not for sure that's always the role. You see, the Bible compares the pastor as a shepherd. I don't know if you know a lot about sheep, but they cannot run far, they cannot run fast. To do so is painful to them. But when sheep get in trouble, the shepherd sometimes forces them to run. He scares them. After it's all over, I'm sure if sheep had the mind of gratitude, they'd come back and say, "Thank you. Didn't enjoy the run, but thank you that you saved us from the danger." Well, sometimes I guess a pastor has to speak of dangers that one might see. I'm not sure if this guy's as attuned to our world. But he makes me uncomfortable in the area of faith, nuclear arms race. Now, this does fit into the message. Let me read a couple of lines. "There is a particular idolatry which makes a mockery of the so-called faith of millions of Christians, our dependence on military expenditures for national defense. This state of affairs is a slap in the face to biblical faith. Abraham, our father, was just a wandering nomad. God protected him, kept his promises to him. Moses, our liberator, went into the very presence of Pharaoh with only a rod in his hands. It was God who acted, who brought his people safely across on dry land. I want you to think with me just a moment. When I watch TV, and that's about the only place I get any preaching, besides listening and reading, but those that are making it in the big time that are being publicized about him preaching are saying to build a strong nation is to get all the power you can get. It's the only way we can keep the Russians out. I want to say, where's our faith? Where's our God? If anybody ought to be saying, be careful about what you store up. And invest millions and billions and billions of dollars into something only God can do and protect us. How big is our God? Now, I'm not recommending foolish living. We've got to deal with the reality and defense. In fact, I'm not recommending anything but just making it a little uncomfortable for us to do some thinking for some of you that have become very comfortable in saying, build strong arms to protect our nation. Where's your faith? And it's the church that seems to be screaming the loudest in some circles that ought to be making people feel uncomfortable about when we start putting our faith in national defense instead of God confidence. The new Moses, the new liberator, defeated the powers of darkness. He defeated the principalities and the powers. He did it not by might. He did it by a lonely death on a cross. And then he asks some questions. Makes this statement. We do not trust God as a nation. We trust our technology and our skill to kill better than anyone else. That's no way to build a church in America. No wonder they're declining in membership. So I read that and I went, I don't know if I like that. Now, don't get all tied up in nuclear warfare and don't say any more than I did. At least you're going to quote me. Don't go and say Charlie's against nuclear planning defense. I did not say that. You still don't know where I am on that issue. Well, let's drop that for just a moment outside of let that be a stimulator to see that we need the Bible study for this morning on faith, and it's very up to date. Matthew, the 8th chapter. When Jesus entered Capernaum. I read that again last night. I was doing some review last night and just taking a look and trying to run it through my mind again, and I read that, and I just finished reading a brochure giving us details on where Marcia and I are going to be. We leave Tuesday for Israel through the generosity of this church and giving us time and finances to make that trip, and we're deeply grateful. And folks, outside of showing you 500 slides, I'll not talk about that all the time, but I hope that it does make me a better preacher. I hope to walk on that ground that Jesus walked on. Somehow brings me back as one. As a better preacher. In fact, I guess that's how this all started. About last March, I believe it was, I was standing outside after the 11 o'clock service and people were coming out and I was shaking hands and one of the men came up and he said, "You made a mistake this morning preaching." I said, jokingly, "Just one." And he's one of my good friends and he said, "Yes." He said, "I think it was just one." He said, "You said that this is the way they used to do it in Jerusalem." He said, "When was the last time you were in Jerusalem?" I said, "I've never been there." And he said, "You've got to go because they're still doing it the same way in Jerusalem that they were then." He said, "I think if we'd get you over there, you'd be a better preacher." And 2 weeks later, he called me and he said, "Make plans, you're going." So We're excited about that. But when I read that, when Jesus had entered Capernaum, we're going to be right there. And I think about, you know, we leave on Tuesday and we're going to be there on Wednesday, in the country on Wednesday. We'll be just about 40 miles from there on Wednesday night. Wow. Out of all the technology we have today, how quickly we can do things. Technology can be such a blessing. It can do so many things to open our eyes. I'm excited about using technology in the right way. I'm afraid of it in the wrong way. You know, when you study the life of Jesus, and you study the life of great leaders, especially in our day and time, and we have so many things that he did not have. We're going to be in that land, and you can take 100-mile line from the place that Jesus was born, and you can take that line and make you a circle then, 100 miles, and stay within that circle and be all the places that Jesus lived and walked and ministered in 33 years. When Jesus had entered Capernaum, a centurion, now that's a person that had quite a bit of influence. In that day and time, the Roman government was made up of a legion in the army, and that was 60,000 soldiers. And then they would take that and break that down, 6,000 soldiers. And then they would break down that 6,000 into groups of 100. And a centurion was in charge of 100 men in the army. That was his position. So and they call this position the backbone of the Roman army. This was the pro. He was the professional army person. A lot of times a person that's in charge of 6,000 was not a pro. That sounds strange to us, but we do the same thing today in our government. And it still works. But back then, they'd give somebody a position of honor, and they would put him in charge of 6,000 people. And then he would have somebody that'd be his advisor. And so the backbone were these advisors that worked with the hundred. And it's true today, folks. Now, if you were to talk about what's the backbone, for example, of the church, it's not pastors. Pastors come and go. When young couples leave this church and they say, "Charlie, we're going to look for another church. We're moving to another town. What do we look for?" I say, "I always get to look for a Sunday school class. Those pastors will come and go. Look for lay people inside that church. They're the ones that stay. Don't join a church because of a certain pastor." The backbone. What's the backbone of the church physically? Well, it's the lay people. It's what make up the church, really. Well, that's the way it was with this person. What's the backbone of our society and the Christian influence? It's the local churches. I like what Billy Graham says. He says about his ministry, "We're icing on the cake, but we're strictly icing." I think it's nice. I like it. I thank God for the Billy Grahams and others that put on that icing. But folks, if you don't get where the action is located, it's in the local church. Our seminaries are being... We have the highest enrollment right now in Southern Baptist of seminaries. We have the largest seminary in the world in number. We have 6 seminaries total. We have the highest group being trained among Christians of any denomination in the world today. Yeah, we're training fewer preachers. That's really interesting. More of them are in education. They're specializing a lot more. Every once in a while I get asked to a seminary to speak. And one of the reasons they have me speak is because I came up the other route and got into the pastorate through the back door. After I speak, sometimes they say, "You're going to leave the same way if you're not careful." I didn't plan on doing this. And a lot of the people at our seminaries now, they're being trained, have already said, "I'm not going to pastor. but I will do this. I think that's a shame. I really did. And so every once in a while they ask me in the challenge, say, get some of these people to think about not being afraid to pastor. I think it's one of the most exciting, fulfilling. Of course, not everybody's got a church that they can work in freely like you can here. I'm going to get this message yet. The backbone. A centurion came to him asking for help. Now, that's very important. Don't miss that. That's part of faith. Help. We say that's weakness. God says that's strength. Isn't it interesting? Lord, he said, don't miss that either. He didn't say good teacher. He said, Lord, my servant lies at home paralyzed in terrible suffering. Don't miss that. Here was a guy who was a top-notch leader, but he still had compassion. Sometimes leadership moves you out of being compassionate. Let me touch on it in the business world. Some of you men and women in the business world that are pros now and you've been at it a long time, if you're not careful, you lose your feeling for people. You forget what it's like to start and how scary it is that first year in business, to wonder, am I going to make it? And you keep going to your CPA saying, are you sure we're making money? Are we going to be able to pay for the building? Am I going to go bankrupt? Some that have been in it long enough, you can really help some younger ones by faith. Don't lose your compassion for the starters, you that are about to finish. Let me see if I can apply it another way. Teachers. Year after year, you get into it and you get into the system, you become very confident. And one of the great things you can pick up out of confidence is to share that with a new teacher. And don't dare lose your compassion for the new teachers or for the students just because you've been there year after year. A lot of times leaders get crusty. It happens in the pastorate. It's one of the dangers of staying in a place a long time. It's one of the dangers I face now, being here 6.5 years, as I lose my compassion. And this just becomes a thing that I do week after week. And I go to the hospital because you're in the hospital, not because I feel for you. I work with you and we counsel and we talk together, but, you know, you're just another case. God help us. Really to stay sensitive. In coaching, that you forget what it's like to be a loser. Boy, that's painful. In a society that's so oriented on scores and who won, not on the process of what happened. And sometimes our society squeezes us, and if anybody ought to be tough and seeing the process is all important, and the score means something but it doesn't mean everything, God give us Christian coaches. You see the point? Here was a leader. And I think one of the things that really caught Jesus' eye about this leader was, even though he was okay, he had a servant that was hurting. And he came all the way for that servant. Will you go all the way for those that you're above, whatever that may mean? The centurion replied, or Jesus said, verse 7, to him, I will go and heal him. The centurion replied, Lord, I do not deserve you to for you to come under my roof. Well, this guy's sensitive. One of the things that had been written to interpret the Old Testament law by the Jewish people was that a Jewish person would never, especially a rabbi, would never go to the home of a Gentile. Here was a Gentile, and Jesus immediately says, I'll go, and the Gentile says, no, you don't need to. And that caught Jesus' attention. And the Gentile said, but just say the word, and my servant will be healed. Such simple faith. And he states his position, for I myself am a man under authority with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes. I tell this one, come, and he comes. I say to this servant, do this, and he does it. In essence, he's saying, I know you can do it, and you don't even have to physically be there. We need that word this morning. When Jesus heard this, he was astonished, surprised, and he said to those following him, I tell you the truth, I have not found anyone in Israel with such a faith. I say to you that many will come from the east and the west, and they'll take their place at the feast of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. Now, that's a very common banquet. They talked about that often in the Jewish family. And when the Messiah came, there would be this great big banquet, and just it's exclusive just for those that are really in. And Jesus says, boy, are you going to be surprised at the banquet feast? There are going to be people coming from east, and there are going to be people coming from the west. Now, east and west at that location meant Gentiles. And then he adds to it, and I say to you that many will come, verse 12, but the subject of the kingdom will be thrown outside. That was the Jewish family he was talking about right there. Into the darkness where there will be weeping and grinding of teeth. Then Jesus said to the centurion, go. This is going to be my last thing I'm going to say in the service today. Ask you a question at that time. Notice what it says. It will be done just as you have believed it would. Let me go ahead and prepare you for that part of thinking in our last thing in the service today. If we were to leave here right now and God were to do in your life just what you've got pictured, what would happen in 82? And his servant was healed at that very hour. Now would you turn the page with me? Verse 23. Here's another part of a faith adventure. The first one's positive. It's one I want to put up before you as an example. Well, Matthew does such an excellent job here. In his arrangement, you see, Jesus has been teaching, and then Matthew wants to take us immediately to the laboratory. He wants to say Jesus is a good teacher and a great preacher, but more than that, he can apply it to life. Now, that's what we must do as Christians, is take head knowledge and put it into heart action. Okay, and so now then Matthew is taking us on this pilgrimage. He takes us to the centurion case and the excellent example. Now here's a negative example of faith. Then he got into the boat and his disciples followed him. Without warning, a furious storm came up on the lake so that the waves swept over the boat. But Jesus was sleeping. His disciples woke him up and he said, Lord, save us. We're going to drown. He replied, you have little faith. Why are you so afraid? Then he got up and rebuked the winds and the waves, and it was completely calm. The men were amazed and asked, what kind of man is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him. Now then, if you hadn't known this story ahead of time, and if I were to ask you, in Jesus' time, there was a sergeant, or a lieutenant, he had been a lieutenant. There was a lieutenant that came to him. And then his disciples. Now, which one would you think had the most faith? And you would say, oh, well, the disciples have spent the most time with him. Surely they have the most faith. Not so. It was the lieutenant who had the most faith. The disciples knew more about Jesus. But folks, it isn't how much you know about Jesus that's the secret of faith. It isn't how much we've got up here. Keep getting it up there. It won't hurt your faith. It can help your faith. But what will help your faith more than anything else is exercise. The same thing is true intellectually. You've seen students come, you that are teachers have seen students come into your classroom, some with excellent backgrounds, with intellectual ability that you could hardly even measure. Then you've seen some come from nowhere where they had such a sloppy background in education, but they've come into class and they've turned out to be the top student. Why? Because they were hungry. And day by day they'd stay in there and struggle and they'd apply and they would read and they would apply and they would think. Or this other one just kind of sat on the sideline and relaxed in the chair. You've seen it in the field of athletics where a kid will come with all the physical talent in the world. Another one will come with just some. Why is it the one with some makes it and the other one doesn't? Because he exercises. How? Daily. Your great student develops daily. Your great athlete develops daily. your great spiritual people develop daily in applying what they know at that moment to what they have in life as an opportunity. The disciples were sideliners here. The centurion was a winner. Now, to take an argument away from you, I want you to turn to Philippians for just a moment, the fourth chapter. Because some of you are thinking, yes, I would have been a great person of faith too if I could have only seen Jesus. If I could have been there and walked with Him on those hills. If I could have been in that boat, I would have had the faith to go when the storm first came up and said, Jesus, we're going to have a storm. It's coming on us. You want us to keep rowing? You'd like to do something about it? Lord, we need some help. At least get in here and take an oar with us. You know? You would have thought, you know, that's what I would have done. And I would have a greater faith if I could just see Jesus. Or if God would just put the handwriting on the wall, I would have a great faith. Well, the Apostle Paul, as far as we know, never walked on the same soil at the same time that Jesus did. Now, he had the Damascus Road experience. But all of you that claim to be Christians have had your personal experience with Christ too. And it can be just as real. Sometimes, in fact, the Damascus Road experience can get in your way in faith. Because it's such an emotional experience, later on you can wonder if you were crazy. I'm sure Satan tempted Paul later on after that Damascus Road experience, saying, you know, I just got too much sun that day and I had a heat stroke. One time I read where a theologian, in fact, said that. He said Paul did not have an experience with Jesus Christ. He had a heat stroke that scared him into conversion. My comment about that is, God, give us more heat strokes. But all of us have had our personal experience, but Paul wasn't there. Yet Paul could talk about this kind of faith. Now, he's in jail for doing something good and decent. And listen to what he says. Rejoice. What an attitude. Rejoice in what? The Lord. Don't rejoice because he's in jail. Rejoice in the Lord. And I'm going to say it again. Always rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. You see, that's the way to exercise faith. Don't panic. Faith is being a gentle person, not a demanding person. How can you be gentle in the midst of the storm? Realize the Lord is near. You've got to go over and wake Him up at times. Not really. He's always awake. But in that boat, if you'd been there, you see, He didn't get on them because they awoke Him from sleeping. He got on because of their faith. The lack of it. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything. There's the application. But in everything, enter it by prayer, petitions, thanksgiving to God. Now, to bring it really up to date for our congregation, I've asked Jenny White to share with you.
All through my day, and you are the shelter. Sunshine when all is good.
questions from the text that we've read. What was the difference in the lieutenant's faith that came to Jesus and said, "Help, I've got a servant that's paralyzed," and the disciple's faith, or lack of faith, that said, "Help, we're sinking"? It seems to me that the focus, two-way focus, is all the difference. In one case, the lieutenant focused in on someone else, not just himself. The disciples seemed to focus in on wind and a ship and water. Where's your focus? Where's your faith? Focus your life in giving it away to others. Focus your faith on Jesus. It makes a difference. Go. It will be done just as you believed it would. You know, more than likely that's true about us this morning. As we go into 82, it's going to be just about what we make it as we believe it to be. And you believe the highest as Jesus calls you to, for your life, for the life of this church and community, for America, for the world. Focus as God focuses on Jesus.